Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. Dave, it is season 9. Who would have thought? Episode 1. Camp has opened for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we're back at it for another year.
Yeah, who knew, right? I mean,
Not us.
No, it's probably amazing that we've made it this far. But we wouldn't have been able to make it this far, obviously, without thousands. I mean, God, I'd hate to try to put a total number. I mean, we see our stats and what each show gets listened to, and obviously not every person listens to every episode. So, geez, I mean, this has turned into like a radio audience. And as I wrote on Twitter the other day, I would have never dreamed, David, you know, what was it, 9 years ago, whatever it is, that we would have the listenership levels that we do now. And obviously, I think that means we're doing something right still after all this time.
Well, at least the Steelers are doing something right.
Yeah. Look, this thing, go back and listen to some of the first episodes, and you will see which one of the two of us has made a little bit of progress. But I think we're still trying to work bugs out with this thing, you know, constantly with sound quality and with that note, made a few changes just last night. So hopefully maybe this show, and I just, you know, it's kind of thing that I just don't have the time with running the site. We're trying to do this podcast and trying to do everything else. I just don't have a lot of time to dedicate to, I guess, being the perfect engineer, if you will. But anyway, David, you know, we get a lot of requests, and I think we've got about three or four of them over the course of the off season here. I guess new listeners wanting to kind of know how this thing all got started. So I guess that would be as good as of any place to start in season 9, episode 1.
Yeah, so you know, I think people generally know my background is I was working in New York in finance in 2008, and kind of the world changed. And I was trading the capital of HSBC's capital, and they offered me a sales job, and probably very unintelligently, I didn't take it. And I was screwing around in New York and decided I'd better get out of there because, you know, not making money and living in New York can get a little expensive real fast. And I came back to Pittsburgh, and I was trying to figure out what to do. And I wasn't doing anything for a period of time. And so I started blogging and, you know, writing about various sporting events kind of across the board. And I wanted to write about the Steelers and talk about the Steelers. And I think, you know, I know we came across each other on Twitter, and maybe you can take it from there, because I don't know, you know, I don't remember exactly how our first conversations went. But I knew I wanted to kind of get involved in this podcast thing.
Yeah. And I'll try to go by what I remember. I remember certain, you know, absolute details of the whole product. First of all, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, this is 2018 now, so I guess it would have been what, 2000, what was it, 9?
Well, that's 9 years ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So podcasting certainly wasn't new at the time, but it was kind of in the early days still. There wasn't a lot of people doing it. There was a lot of buzz about talking about how, you know, if you have a site and a blog or whatnot, and you want to kind of be authoritative in the field or whatnot, you might want to, you know, or have some level of authoritative, you know, if you, you know, level standard, if you will, that you should probably start a podcast. So that became kind of my fascination. I started researching it all, and look, you know, I knew that I had never been on radio, never done a podcast or anything like that. So my immediate thought was, I'm not going to be able to do a podcast by myself, and I would like it to be almost like a radio show. I mean, throughout the years, I've had favorite radio shows, sports radio shows, you know, Dan Patrick, show, you know, Rome, you name it. You know, I've always been kind of, you know, intrigued by ones that I like. So I said, you know what, let me go out and see if I can find somebody that has a radio background. Well, long story short, and obviously wanted somebody with Pittsburgh that kind of knew what was going on in the sports world. I just started researching, I think, the radio stations at the time, and I came across, what was the call letters, 104?
104.7. Yeah, that's I was doing pirate stuff back then.
Right, you were doing the pirates. I don't know if it was the post-game, pre-game?
Pre and post-game, yep.
Pre and post-game, and those... And credit to that site at the time, because there wasn't a lot of radio outlets doing it at the time. They were actually archiving the stuff online. I mean, kind of a modern day podcast. I mean, it was obviously a recording of your live broadcast that just people could listen to after the fact. And I came across those. And, of course, they were Pirates related. And you could tell that you had a passion for the Pirates. You definitely... sounded like you belonged on a radio.
And smoke and mirrors.
You know, I don't know how to best describe it any more than that. I mean, you have a radio voice. You sounded prepared. You know, I think you did a lot of calling. In fact, I think rest in peace, Alan Gifford. I think used to be a regular caller. I think. Of that show as well too, but anyway, I listened to a couple of those. And I thought, yeah, you know, this guy, and you did. Correct me if I'm wrong. You didn't have a regular show. I think you were just doing that.
No, not at that point. I didn't.
Part time at then. I think we followed each other on Twitter at the time and traded barbs back and forth. And I don't remember if I contacted you via Twitter or email from. You know, that I got off the radio site or not, but I think that's how I initially connected with you, and you know, that's kind of I think how it all started. Is that kind of how you remember it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we exchanged some emails on the internet and you know, tried to figure it out, and I remember I wanted to do it, and I felt like you were very well equipped. So for me, it was a good match for me. And of course made you do all the work because you had to record the thing. So that was even better.
And I still do it. Right. But I mean, obviously, you know, the early days, you know, you having some background and already doing it, me not. It was awkward, you know.
Sure. Yeah, we've had our ups and downs along the way. No, any relationship, you know, get out and get it going, and just, you know, what makes sense and what doesn't. But you know, it feels like it's been easy for a long time, which is nice.
Yeah, I think we it probably took, I don't know, a year and a half for us to get kind of used to what each other strengths and weaknesses were and all like that and just get more comfortable overall in doing it, because you go back and you listen to those early ones and you try to be too rigid, too perfect, and really not who you are, at least on my end. And I think once I kind of let loose of that and not trying to be, you know, I let myself become the, who was the Felix and Oscar, the messy educator. I think the more I let myself become that end of it, I think the better the show got, you know. So you know, we definitely are kind of a odd couple, if you will. You're obviously, in case people haven't figured it out now, he's the more educated one. I'm not, and we'll just leave it at that. But, and we both have kind of, a long, rich history, I think, in being Pittsburgh sports fans, not only Steelers, but Pirates and Penguins as well, too, and geographic areas, I'm sure, where we were raised and cultures we were raised are definitely come out, in these podcasts as well, too. But, yeah, I mean, that's the long and short of it. And here we are, you know, 9 years later, still doing these things. And I've said it all along, David, it's still kind kind of the highlight, one of the highlights of what I do during the week, and especially when we're right in the pocket, if you will, the season and doing three shows a week. I really look forward to our chats roughly 3 hours a week.
Yeah, it's good fun. And as we both said on Twitter, it's really is an honor for us to have the group of people that we're the community that we've got and love hearing from people and love the support and everything they've done. And certainly over the years, the contributions people have made financially and just verbally in emails and tweets and all that stuff. It's very, we're very privileged. So thanks to all our listeners.
And we to let everybody know, we still haven't met. You know, all these, you know,
that's true.
That's
true.
That's probably the most amazing thing about it. And really with my writers as well, too. Quick synopsis or summary. You know, Matthew Marks, he's starting his sixth season on the site. I think Alex Kozora came along not too long after that. You know, these things just tend to work out sometimes. And David can attest, I can be very hard to work with. At times, probably 6 days out of seven, I can be very hard to work with. So the fact that David stuck around this long and Alex and Matthew is really phenomenal. And I'm really excited to start this season. I can't believe that I get to do what I get to do. Wake up every day just as excited, especially now with training camp getting underway.
All right, good stuff. So if you want to, you got any more questions or whatever, just email us. We'd like to let people know what's going on every once in a while. But now what's going on is the Steelers have reported. And Dave, I mean, you know, I actually don't know this. I mean, there's a lot we know about other teams, and we like to think that we're pretty informed and pay attention. One thing I certainly don't pay attention to is how other teams report to camp. Is the Steelers' game of reporting to camp completely different than does any other team have the kind of, you know, yearly show the Steelers have? I mean, it was Brett Kiesel for a long time. What kind of vehicle was he going to show up in? And now that, you know, that moniker or title has been passed on to Antonio Brown, who obviously came in a helicopter the other day. Does any other team have this kind of, I mean, not many teams go away. So I imagine they don't, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of them don't go away these days. And I mean, you go back over the years, what, James Harrison in the smart car, fire trucks, dump trucks,
tractors.
It seems like we're missing some way before that as well, too. But it really reporting.
Mini Cooper, Brett, yeah. Ben showing in a Mini Cooper.
It really has become a spectacle. And now, is a lot of the throng needed? I mean, you have the select few that come out and talk and all like that, and obviously appreciate those kind of interviews. But I think the better interviews happen as camp goes on. But yeah, I mean, what you keep wondering how these guys are going to top themselves. It doesn't bother you that these guys come in, make grand entrances every year. I mean, I know you see a lot of it on Twitter and Facebook this year, or really last 4 or 5 years. Some people just get really bent out of shape that, you know, people go over the top with these entrances. It doesn't bother me one bit. It doesn't reflect how the team's going to play, in my opinion. I mean, look, you got divas on every team. Would you expect anything else? And really, Antonio Brown's been the subject the last, what, 3 or 4, 5 years with the Rolls Royce and now the helicopter and all like that. My wife did say, I mean, it did catch her eye. She says, was it really necessary for him to come in a helicopter? You know, so it doesn't bother me, but I guess that's a long question, or a long answer to your question is, yeah, I'm not sure there is another team that has such a kind of arrival to camp spectacle as the Steelers still do.
Yeah, I've not seen anybody talk about those types of things. And again, this is in the big picture of things, folks. This is a non-event. I mean, it's, you know, look, nobody. We've talked about Antonio Brown, you know, for the entire time he's been on the Steelers. He's I when I was up at training camp doing shows, I would make a point of pointing out that nobody works harder than Antonio Brown. Stays after practice, working on the jugs machine, catching balls with one hand, catching balls with his back turned, turning around, doing all the things that he does to do extra work. So, you know, look, Antonio Brown, there is some consternation with some of the off-the-field stuff that happened, certainly, you know, after the playoff game a couple of years ago, the Facebook Live stuff and things like that, and some of the demonstrations on the field. I realized that, you know, for some old-school, you know, do-it-this-way type of football fans, that stuff can get a little bit old. But, you know, it's in terms of Antonio Brown and the football player and how the Steelers are going to perform this year, obviously all that stuff's a non-event, so... is what it is.
Right. And let's see. I mean, you know, as far as reporting day went, I think the biggest story, and I guess it turned out to be a positive that we talked about him 20, 25 minutes in the previous show, just after I removed him from my 53-man roster prediction. Eli Rogers visited with the Steelers on reporting day, signed a one-year contract, and immediately got placed on the active PUP list. I think if you look at each one of those little mini stories inside the main story there, probably none of that is surprising overall. Eli, there were reports he went to Kansas City and visited. I don't know for sure whether or not he made it to Cleveland. I know he was supposed to go to Cleveland. I think there was also a report that he was going to visit with the Raiders. I'm not sure that ever happened either, but maybe he took a look around out there and probably figured, look, probably my best choice, or maybe he didn't even get the offers we think that he did. Maybe teams saw that he still wasn't ready, you know, to participate, and they said, come back and tell us when you are. And I kind of theorized, and I think I said as much on our last show, that he probably had that one-year minimum contract in his hand all the time, and he probably said, look, this is probably going to be my best chance. Don't be patient with me. I can go ahead and sign, start, you know, getting back in the rhythm of things, learning any changes that may have taken place with Randy Feitner now at offensive coordinator, and go from there. So this team, and as Alex and I talked last night on the training camp podcast recap podcast, they're a better team than they were before reporting to training camp with Eli Rogers back on this roster at the wide receiver position.
Is he a lock to make the final 53?
You know what, that's another thing we talked about as well too. I wouldn't bet my house on it, David. I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah, I had some people, you know, on Twitter suggest to me that, you know, he was less than a 50-50 thing. Like I've said, look, maybe 95 was a little bit high. I'll be very surprised if Eli Rogers, assuming we have some level of health here relatively quickly, that he's able to go full speed, I'd be very surprised if Eli Rogers doesn't make the team. I think, you know, you've got four guys, you got three guys who are absolute locks, James Washington being the third, no question. You know, those three guys are the guys. And then Eli's, to me, a very clear fourth. And then you have three guys, you know, battling for five and possibly six. And as we talked about the other day, it's Hunter, DHB, and Tucker. And those are the guys it would be shocking if anybody else really was kind of involved in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, his immediate signing definitely, you know, brings Marcus Tucker back into, you know, you really have to question. Now, I mean, not that there wasn't questions that he would make it beforehand, but, I mean, there's definitely going to be a battle there. Justin Hunter, I mean, if Eli's return really hurts anybody, it's probably Quadre Henderson, right? I mean, not that he had, you know, I don't know what percentage of chance you want to give him before any of this happened, 5%, 8%. I mean, obviously injuries and stuff can happen, but Quadre Henderson really, you know, the re-signing of Eli Rogers really impacts him. Hunter, DHB, I mean, look, I always like to say over the years, you know, don't write these things in ink because they have a funny way of working themselves out via injuries and whatnot. I think that obviously you would have to give Eli Rogers you know, a greater probability of making the final 53 than not. But with that said, like I said, I wouldn't bet my house on it.
Fair enough. Okay, so we've seen them report. We've seen them have a practice. You know, look, I wanted to put this on Twitter yesterday, and I just decided against it. It's the first day of practice. Guys are going to run with teams a certain way. I wouldn't read virtually anything into any of it. The veterans are going to get the nod over the rookies. Basically, that's how that's going to work, and that's how it's always worked, except for, you know, very rare examples like Ryan Shazier, and, you know, we can count the examples on one hand.
Even T.J. Watt last year running.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, he did. He ran first team right away in front of James Harrison. And we knew that. We knew that was coming. But so no surprises here in terms of, you know, who was going to run with what. And I mean, maybe there are surprises for some people. But I don't think there was a lot of stuff that was particularly newsworthy. You know, people talked about Tucker getting a couple first team reps. Well, you know, they don't have that many receivers. You know, there's only a certain number of guys out there. So you're going to get some reps. On the flip side of things, like Mason Rudolph running fourth, well, what, you know, day one, what'd you, you know, where are you going to put Mason Rudolph? You have no choice really, but to put him fourth. You're not just going to elevate him over a guy who's been there for a year, even in Josh Dobbs. So there's nothing to be read into any of the first day stuff. I don't think. Was there anything in your mind, Dave, that was noticeable? I mean, maybe something like the fact that Cam Sutton said he's going to get all his reps at various, you know, spots of corner in the defense and not at safety. I mean, you know, that's probably noteworthy because it's how a certain guy is going to be used, not necessarily what team he's running with, but how he's going to be used. So that was, I thought that was a little bit noteworthy.
Yeah. And look, you know, going back through Alex's notes and we talked about this last night, and we made sure to add a disclaimer at the end. I think as we kind of do at the first podcast, the training camp podcast every year, is these things tend to percolate through the first 3 or 4 days of camp of who's running where. And really the main thing I think Alex kind of focuses on is just the kind of overall groups and maybe where positions people are lining up more so than really what teams are. Now, you obviously still have your first team, first group offensive line, your second group offensive line, third group offensive line, things along those lines, things that we were kind of curious about, but ended up probably, I bet if you asked 9 out of 10 Steeler fans that they would have predicted the kind of the pecking order, you know, Maticavage hitting the field first as inside linebacker alongside Williams, Sean Davis getting, you know, work at free safety first, those kind of things. Obviously, how many people expected Mason Rudolph to be ahead of Josh Dobbs on day one of camp? You got to make a, you know, for just pecking order and humbleness alone, you need to keep the pecking order, you know, from veteran to new guy on the roster, if you will. So I think you're seeing a lot of that early on in training camp. So no, was there anything earth shattering that oh, look at this, you know, from day one of training camp? Absolutely not. We're probably not even going to get into really anything blowing our mind or really giving a hint of what's going to happen maybe later on until we start seeing how they start treating maybe more of their sub packages on defense specifically. You know, some dime stuff, you know, how they function in some of these nickel sub packages, if you will. You know, are they going to pull, you know, how is Edmonds going to fit in this? Will he fit in this sooner rather than later? So I think those are some of the bigger questions that we're going to have to wait a while, you know, to get some answers during training camp. But nonetheless, it's still fun to hear a lot of, you know, the reports that come out of there, the 11-on-11 stuff, some of the battles that are going to take place throughout training camp. But no, overall, you know, we didn't stop the presses yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And I mean, was there anything in terms of, we haven't spoken since Mike Tomlin spoke to the media, and people know how I feel about Mike Tomlin. It's fine. I'm a big Mike Tomlin fan. If you don't know, there are things Mike Tomlin can do better. But in general, I'm a big fan of Mike Tomlin. I think one of the things I always appreciate with Mike Tomlin is when people criticize him and when people have opinions about him, if they are guys who have earned the opportunity to say things. It's happened with Ben last year. In particular, it happened with Ben when he's been, various times he has questioned how the Steelers do things. It obviously happened with James Harrison. And Mike, to his credit, always says, he's earned the right to have his opinion, and he's welcome to it. And he just moved on from, the comments that James Harrison made comparing the Steelers and the Patriots and Mike and Bill Belichick. And I thought he handled it fine. That's exactly how I expected him to handle it. I don't think it was particularly newsworthy, but because he didn't make it newsworthy.
What do you mean? You mean Mike Tomlin's a different coach than Bill Belichick? I mean, we have known that for a while. I mean, James Harrison just brings this out into the, I guess, the mainstream of some of these, higher profile talk shows, if you will. And, none of that's a surprise. I mean, does Bill Belichick treat everybody but Tom Brady maybe equally, probably more so than Mike?
Probably not quite, but maybe more than most coaches.
Right. Bill Belichick probably doesn't send out a lot of Christmas cards, right? I mean, to his players, he doesn't have a lot of probably personal. He's not a player's coach. I mean, we've heard ex-players talk about, boy, it's certainly.
Danny Amendola went right down to Miami. First thing he said after, a little bit of time with Adam Gase.
Right. Not fun to play for. I mean, practices aren't fun, if you will. Now, Mike Tomlin, does Mike Tomlin have play favorites? You damn right he does. And I think, what was it? Marquise Pouncey, I think, during the introduction said, look, would you expect Ben Roethlisberger to be treated differently than Joshua Dobbs? Yeah, you would. I mean, now and then here's the thing, though. Conditioning test, immediately Mike Tomlin doesn't make Marquise Pouncey, Cameron Hayward, Ramon Foster, run the conditioning test. All right, and people say, "Well, look, that just backs up everything James Harrison said. He plays favorite, doesn't treat everybody equal." Okay, and I mean, is that the determining factor of what makes a team, a Super Bowl team and not a Super Bowl team? I mean, last I looked, the Patriots didn't win it all last year, right?
Yep.
So.
If people want to walk around and compare Mike Tomlin to Bill Belichick, that's fine. I mean, I don't think there's a knowledgeable football fan on the planet who doesn't think Bill Belichick's the best coach in the NFL today, and pretty clearly maybe the best coach in the history of the NFL, certainly in terms of depth of knowledge of the game. I mean, as a historian of football, Bill Belichick might be unmatched. I mean, the guy's record speaks for itself, but so does Mike Tomlin's. And then I realize, look, forever people are going to get – one of the funny things, Dave, and I think I mentioned this in the middle of the summer on one of the few podcasts I did, is people talk about, they're underperformed. I mean, he's got a Hall of Fame quarterback. There are 9 or 10 Hall of Fame quarterbacks who've been playing during Ben Roethlisberger's career. I mean, you start at the beginning, start on the front side and just go through the list and – John Elway, I don't know if Elway and Ben crossed at the beginning of their careers, but you just go from Peyton Manning forward, and you're gonna have a list that's going to go through, 9 or 10 guys. So, just because you have a Hall of Fame quarterback doesn't mean you win, 4 Super Bowls. And maybe there's one really good Hall of Fame quarterback, in this case Tom Brady, who's taken Super Bowls from Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger, et cetera. So, it is a tired line of well, you know, he's got a Hall of Fame quarterback, and that, you know, they didn't do enough with the talent.
Is Bill Belichick a better coach than Mike Tomlin? Yes.
Yeah, period.
Period. What's the gap? I'm not going to get into the gaps.
Yeah, and James Harrison pointed out to me, I think, the things that are unique about Bill Belichick. I mean, Bill Belichick looks for guys to play specific roles and do specific things on his team like no other coach in football. I mean, when he trades for at the trade deadline 2 years ago, Kyle Van Noy? He gets a linebacker from Detroit for a fourth round pick because he says, look, this guy is going to do something specific for us in our defense. And I've looked at him and I've watched the tape enough to know that that's exactly the type of guy we're missing. Those kind of tweaks, just teams don't make those kind of tweaks. It's a very unique thing that he really is able to assess guys' abilities and put them in specific individual roles where they will succeed and oftentimes do just that one specific thing. Look, if you're a football fan and you don't just have black and gold blinders on, it's fascinating to watch him operate, to watch him, you know, coach and to succeed. It's unique.
And I think, and look, I mean, what you just said is a very thing Alex and I hit on last night about specialized and Belichick and some of those comments that Harrison made. So it's funny that you bring that up because obviously I know you didn't have a chance to listen to the podcast from last night. But that's exactly right. In today's specialized NFL, if you will, I think the team that can get more specialized and do it extremely well, because it is hard. I mean, it's got to be hard to have a defense, say, that includes, 15, 16 guys, have them kind of specialized and get them on and off the field and on the right page for 98% of the game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's one thing that the Patriots do well, very well, right?
No question.
And one of the conversations Alex and I have had a few times this offseason is how vast will the Steelers' defense be this year? I mean, obviously it's grown over the years. You know, you don't just talk about a starting 11 defense anymore. You know, it's grown to 13, 14 guys. Is it going to be like 16 guys? You know, talking about, you know, when you mix in Edmonds and Cameron Sutton and maybe both Bostic and Maticavage at different packages alongside Williams. You know, are we going to see more of that? And if so, you know, you better be damn good at getting these bodies on and off the field quickly in these situations and know who's calling what and having the communication level that certainly hasn't been there for the Steelers the last however many years. I think that's one area. I guess what I'm trying to drive home is the point that that's one thing that did stick out about what James Harrison had to say, and I think that's one aspect of what Bill Belichick and his coaching staff does in New England that really sets them apart from a lot of really all other teams in the NFL. And just look, I mean, I know they won the Super Bowl a couple years ago against Seattle. I know they probably shouldn't have, but that one play alone with the whole interception there at the end of the game, you've obviously seen, you know, the whole do your job, you know, thing and all the practice that went on into maybe potentially seeing that same kind of look the week leading up to the Super Bowl. That's what won the Super Bowl, right?
Yep, no question. And that's a great video if you haven't seen it. The kind of two-part, I think, there are a lot of documentaries out there on Parcells, on Belichick, the one with Parcells that came out this summer. You know, I love it. Look, I love seeing and learning about people who are at the peak of their profession, and Bill Belichick is that. And, you know, you're dead on. That's the Malcolm Butler practicing that stuff. And, you know, Belichick, what I thought was maybe the worst decision in history, not calling timeout, but having a reason to not call timeout because of what he saw and how the Seahawks were adjusting. That's just, you know, what that is that's hundreds. I mean, that's thousands of hours of preparation and then being able to make a decision in the moment that you trust And it obviously it won the biggest title. You know, it paid off in the biggest way possible.
And no, for those tuning in, this is not Patriots Depot and the Chowderhead podcast. I mean, it's the finer details sometimes, I think. And I, you know, you get into the whole clock management thing at times. It's just sometimes it's the little finer details that we think Mike Tomlin can be better at to help close that gap. But is he a good enough coach to take a team to the Super Bowl still? Yes. Is he a good enough coach to take this specific team to the Super Bowl? Absolutely he is. So, you know, I don't know what we got on, you know, led to kind of this, but yeah, I think Mike Tomlin has handled himself well. He doesn't want to talk about Le'Veon Bell anymore. He's not in camp. He wants to talk about the guys that are there. He'll leave the soap opera stuff, if you will, about the whole James Harrison stuff to the media, and he moves forward. And I think he's good about that. He's very, if there's one thing about Mike Tomlin, and you know this from being at the press conferences from all the years. He's very consistent and very, very hard to flap or shake up, right?
No question. Very, like it or not, he's very self-confident. And he has every reason to be. And you know, he got asked about, his job. He said, look, I need to improve what I do every year. What's the point of being here if you're not trying to improve every year? So, I would ask him that question every year, and he wouldn't answer it more than to say just what I said. He wouldn't get into the finer details of how what's your own self-assessment. He would often say, I leave that to Mr. Rooney. That's his job to assess me. We'd have those questions. And I have no doubt that Mike Tomlin has a thirst for knowledge and a thirst to be a better coach. So, how he approaches that, I don't know the answer to, but, I think the Steelers have the right guy.
He seemed a little taken back the other day when he's asked if he does self-assessment after the season. Kind of laughs and said, "Are you serious?" And that's the way he kind of answered that. But look, do they have high expectations this year? Absolutely, they do. Should they be one of the two teams left in the AFC when the dust settles? Absolutely, they should. We'll see how it transpires moving forward from here. But there's few. Look, he's not going anywhere anytime soon. So that's that. And I think Kevin Colbert's held a talk with the media this morning, and as you would expect. Doesn't have any issues with the way Mike Tomlin coaches or the way he handles his team.
All right. So that's that point.
David, did you show up for this ninth season of the Terrible Podcast in the best shape of your entire career?
Well, no. The answer is no, I did not. Ben apparently did. And I joked that, what is this, spring training? Because for those who follow baseball, there's kind of a running joke of how many players at spring training are going to say, and there's a hashtag, best shape of his life, B-S-O-H-L, that people use when guys say that. And we did hear Ben say that, I don't know that he said in his life, but he said in a lot of years, right? Best shape he's been in many years.
Yeah, like 7 or 8 years, right? Look, I mean, I'm not there. I don't see him. He looks great in the pictures.
And we say this every year, right? He looks leaner, thinner, whatever it is. It seems like a ongoing thing. Look, Ben doesn't have to run a bunch of 50-yard sprints. He's got to, get back in the pocket and make the good throws and read the defenses. So if he were 5 pounds overweight or, 5 pounds less, I don't think it's make any difference. But sure, it's good to know that he feels like he's in good shape.
It's a talking point. He looks like Ben to me. If he feels that cutting out the sugar and the carbs or whatever and helps his knees and his ankles and all that kind of stuff, great. Fantastic. Has he looked a little pudgier in other years? I suppose. But least of my concerns right now entering this year's training camp was what's Ben going to look like?
Right. And So why don't you just in terms of a housekeeping thing, there were a couple little roster things. One of the offensive linemen didn't complete the conditioning test, and somebody said, you know, if you don't, I don't know which player it was, said if you don't complete the conditioning test, you should be cut. He got cut with a non-football injury, I guess, or something. So I don't know if there was a health issue, but you know, the conditioning test is running 800-yard dashes, which it's not. Nobody's putting a stopwatch on you. Just get to the other end of the field 8 times, which. Yeah, you know, I think most people who can, you know, maybe not most, but you know, running 800-yard dashes at a nice leisurely pace should not, you know, if you're a professional athlete, you should be able to do that. Let's just put it that way.
Well, you know what's funny about it is you've had two offensive linemen talk about this before the before the conditioning test even ran this year. Ramon Foster on Sirius at the end of last week said something to the line of, you know, you never see the big guys fail it. It's always, he says, it's always a wide receiver or a skill position guy, and then not long after they fail it, they're usually gone. Obviously referencing last year with Kanan Severin failing the conditioning test, and then he was placed on PUP, active PUP, and then he comes off active the PUP not long after, and then out the door he went. Well, lo and behold, Marquise Pouncey was the one that showed up at camp this year saying, boy, these, you know, 8 100s, if you can't run that, you deserve to get cut or you need to be cut. Not too long after that, of course, Pouncey and what's funny is Pouncey and Foster didn't even have
to run.
They didn't even have to do it. And Bryce Harris, the veteran, you know, which if you were to pick one big guy that you probably, you know, the odds would have been okay with him probably making it through it, had been a guy like Bryce Harris, a guy that's not a stranger to training camps. Obviously, first time in Latrobe in a Steelers training camp. And he couldn't finish there you go. An offensive lineman couldn't finish it. And I guess after everything that Pouncey and Foster put out there, Mike Tomlin really had no choice but to cut him. But non-football illness is why he had his contract terminated. Talking about Bryce Harris, signed in his place, Malik Reeves. This also, he's a former, he's an undrafted free agent this year out of Villanova. And really, his position's kind of noteworthy because Trey Johnson, upon arriving to training camp in order to make room for Eli Rogers, Trey Johnson was the one that was waived injured because Trey Johnson showed up training camp with a shoulder injury, apparently. All those transactions, I think, went through yesterday. We'll find out today. You would expect Trey Johnson to clear waivers and then revert back to the Steelers' injured reserve list at a split salary amount, awaiting to see if he gets a settlement within the next few days there. So that's really kind of, well, I mean, that is all the housekeeping. Now, Patrick Collins, the offensive backup center for the Steelers, did leave practice late yesterday with what looked like maybe a knee injury. So Mike Tomlin did not mention Collins or Parker Collins. I don't know why I want to call him Patrick Collins. Parker Collins left practice with a possible knee injury. Mike Tomlin did not mention that after practice was over. We'll see what happens there. If anything is, you know, serious with Parker Collins, you would think they're going to make a move right away to get another guy in there, and Collins might be waived injured as well too. So we'll have to see what happens with the knee injury there, but that should bring everybody up to date kind of on the housekeeping, if you will.
Okay. couple Steelers out there kind of looking for work. Our boy Arthur Motes signs a 1-year deal with the St. Louis Cardinals, the Arizona Cardinals. Good for him. Good guy. You know, we've always said, look, Arthur Motes, great guy to have on your team. He is just a guy in terms of the NFL. He was signed as a role player for the Steelers. He stuck around for, you know, maybe longer than people thought. Not a guy you want to have starting 10 games for you, but if you need to start one, that's fine. A solid special teams contributor, good guy in the locker room. Just in terms of good people that I came across in my time of dealing with guys, in terms of good people, Arthur Motes is top of the list. Not that there aren't other guys at the top of the list as well, but he is a top guy. He is a guy who gives to his community in a big way. He's given a ton of money to James Madison, his college. This is a guy, obviously, who's not making $10 million a year. He's he's paid like a backup NFL linebacker. But good for when it's not a lot of times like I actually have sentiment toward individuals. I'm happy Arthur Motes has a job.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I mean, like Lawrence Timmons, right? I mean, a good guy. Motes, very well spoken. You want to talk about somebody as soon as his NFL career is over that's going to have no problems. The network should be falling over him, in my opinion, to have him as kind of an analyst, NFL Network. Who's the former Patriot that's on that I can't stand on NFL?
Eddie Griske?
No. Well, him. He's not good. No, him too. We could go down the list, couldn't we? God, I'm drawing a blank. On NFL Network, McGinnis, Willie McGinnis. He's horrible at his job preparation and all. I mean, Arthur Motes, I think the network should be falling all over themselves to get Arthur Motes on the media side after his playing days are over. It's going to be interesting to see if Arthur makes the Cardinals roster this being signed this late in the offseason. Mike Mitchell apparently took a visit there as well too. And check this, Trey Boston ended up getting signed by the Cardinals, so that the one less spot for Mike Mitchell to land. And Shamarco Thomas landed with the Colts. It'll be interesting to see if he's able to stick with them. And was there someone else that signed? I'm drawing a blank if there was another former Steeler that signed with another team just as training camps open. I know Mitchell was supposed to visit the Cardinals, but he didn't sign with them there. I know you probably don't like talking about it, but anytime there's money and contract numbers involved, I'm going to talk about it. Todd Gurley's contract numbers were released. I don't know if you've read all the details, David. I wrote about this a few days ago. You look at what Todd Gurley was scheduled to make the next 2 years. You add on to the fact that what 2 more years of franchise tag numbers would have been for him. You look at what he's going to get through the first 3 years of this deal, which is $40 million cash flow value. You look at the quote unquote, you get into the semantics of what's fully guaranteed and what's virtually guaranteed.
Right.
21.95 is the actual fully guaranteed amount for Todd Gurley. That's his signing bonus of $21 million, and that's his base salary of $950,000, okay? Now, are there kind of rolling guarantees in this thing that make the guarantees higher, if you will? Yes. Okay, but if you want to just boil it down to brass tacks, and I double-checked this with Joel Corey just in case, it's 21.95 in fully guaranteed money. Now, you look at his cash flow, you look at what he stood to earn. I mean, he's making more in 3 years now than what he stood to earn in the next 4 years with the Rams. He obviously gets paid now. You can understand why it's a good deal for both sides. You can make sure you read that language on that Mike Florio has posted as to when these subsequent years are guaranteed. Like 2020, a roster bonus due, and we're talking about Gurley here, 2020, a roster bonus due on the third day of the 2020 league year, $7.55 million, guaranteed for injury at signing, meaning when he originally signed his contract, and fully guaranteed. Now, this is where you got to make sure you watch your dates. That 7.55 million becomes fully guaranteed on the third day of 2019 league year, the year prior to that. So when you get into talking about these rolling guarantees and all, what's really guaranteed, what's injury guaranteed, you really got to read the fine print on these things. So the question then becomes, and I wrote this kind of comparative going back and looking at Le'Veon Bell. You know, Le'Veon Bell was supposedly going to make $33 million through the first 2 years. And what was it? 45 through the first three. People want to get back into the semantics. How much was fully guaranteed of the Le'Veon Bell deal? The one report out there, unfortunately, is by Ian Rappaport. And that's the only thing that states that only a signing bonus of around $10 million was fully guaranteed. If you look at the way the Steelers have done contracts, these big contracts over the years, it would be absolutely a surprise, at least to me, if $10 million was the only guaranteed amount of first-year money for Le'Veon Bell. I'm not saying that I'm not going to talk in a definite here, but look, and I wrote and talked about this all offseason. 18 to 20 million in year one is what Le'Veon Bell likely was offered from the Steelers. Was that fully guaranteed? Was it partially guaranteed? Look, I don't know. For sure, I do not know. But I'll tell you this. It would have taken a lot for Le'Veon Bell not to see, let's say the first year money was $20, $21 million. It would have taken something very stupid on his part not to see that, as would it have taken something very unforeseen for him not to make the $33 million through the first 2 years. And really, I would have hedged my bet that we would have saw the $45 million in the first 3 years. Now, when you're talking about fully guaranteed money here, and what Bell may or may not have turned down, and you look at what Todd Gurley got, and knowing that the quote-unquote fully guaranteed, I hate that we keep having to specify fully, but David, I'm telling you, some people don't want to draw a line between fully and virtually and this, that, and the other, but $21.95 million is what was fully guaranteed. Does Le'Veon Bell really think, now you can go ahead and count, like Mike Florio did in his post of a virtually guaranteed, Gurley, 30 something million dollars through the first whatever being basically guaranteed, yada yada. But did Le'Veon Bell make a mistake turning down this deal? And is he going to find a team willing to give him more than $21.95 million? Quote unquote fully guaranteed in March.
Well, I think you should have taken the deal. I've said that. The Gurley deal is not what it was represented to be. I think people went, they basically lost their minds suggesting that the market had been reset. The market's not reset. We all know what the market is. It's around 14-15 million bucks for a running back. That's where Zeke's going to come in. It's where David Johnson's going to come in. It's where, the rest of the guys are coming in. Nobody's getting 18. It's not going to happen. These top end guys will probably get more than 12. So, this isn't, there's nothing surprising about this, except the timing of this deal is a little bit surprising because Gurley's under contract. So giving him $20 million yesterday, when you had him under control for 2 years, you might question the judgment of that. That would be the thing that I would question. The numbers, they're dead in line with what I would expect.
And people want to look at there's different ways, and Joel Corey likes to determine average yearly value a little bit different than most other people. Now, he's a former agent and all, but, if you just look at new money that Todd Gurley got and then divide that new money amount by the new years, that's how you get the quote-unquote reset of the market at the running back position, if you will. The thing is, too, and people say, new money versus old money, I'm going to confuse the hell out of a lot of people here, but when you look at really what Todd Gurley is going to earn cash flow through the first 4 years of this deal, and people don't understand cash flow is a big, big selling point in these deals. You know, and what ends up getting them done a lot of times. The more cash earlier in the deal, the more players like it, and especially when more of it's tied to guarantees on top of it. But when you look at Todd Gurley through 2021, the first 4 years of this deal, $49 million is the cash flow of that. Now, what's 49 divided by 4, David?
12.
Okay, so even though he's got a new money average of resetting a market of, you know, what, over 15, realistically, isn't that what he's going to cost the Rams over the next 4 years?
Sure. I mean, you know, over the next 6 years, you know, it's he's playing under the his number and his option, and then he's got this, you know, this deal coming. So it just, you know, as I say, look, the Rams, I don't know what kind of special salary cap they have, because it's highly entertaining, the moves they've made. If you're a Rams fan, it's like Christmas every other week. I mean, you get, you know, it's just, you know, and you get one, and you get one, and you get, you know, they're making trades, bringing in high profile guys, whether you think they're, you know, quality individuals or not, certainly open to debate. But they've added a bunch of players, and they signed, apparently, you know, they seemingly have signed them all.
Yeah,
you know,
but
except Aaron Donald, somebody's not getting paid at the end of the day.
Well, don't forget too, they don't have a quarterback making franchise money right now.
And this is what we've seen with Seattle and Russell Wilson. We saw it. If you can find your quarterback and get him on the field early, I mean, look, you know, Russell Wilson, it was a particular case because he was the third round pick and he wasn't making, you know, top of the draft money. And obviously, Wentz and Goff are making top of the draft money. But yeah, you don't have to pay the 20 yet, the 30 yet.
What would you say to the people that would ask, well, why would the Rams even lock up Todd Gurley right now when they could, you know, he still had two cheapish years remaining? You know, he was scheduled to make what, almost $12 million, talking about Gurley, over the course of the next 2 years. Okay, with what was it, like nine million something of it being next year originally as part of them picking up his fifth year option. So people will ask, well, why wouldn't the Rams just wait and keep him at that low price and then worry about him later? Well, the market's constantly going up on these players. You know, and the flip side is, too, you want to get those guys in now, get the bulk of their money when you don't have a franchise quarterback under franchise quarterback deal to have to contend with. Get those high cap years in and out of the way early. And plus, you don't have him, you know, being disgruntled and all like that. You don't have to go through the back-to-back salary cap. Franchise tag years as well too. So really, it makes sense, and it's a cash grab for Gurley now, because he was only going to make what, $2 million this year, and as I said, he was only going to make almost $12 million over the course of the next 2 years, and instead he's getting almost 22 million this year alone. So you can see why it was a give and take there. Now you have a guy like Le'Veon Bell that's working off of back-to-back tags. Okay, so his figuring is, I've got almost $27 million in the bank, and I will after this year. Of the last 2 years of tag, I gamble a little bit. And people will say, well, why didn't the Steelers get this done with Bell years ago? Well, remember that he had the suspensions and the knee injuries and all like that. Ideally, you would have liked to seen Bell signed to an extension going into his fourth and final year of his rookie contract, right?
Yep.
But you couldn't do that, right?
Yep.
And that's why. I mean, this Le'Veon Bell would probably be under contract for a few more years at this point had he not gotten himself suspended, had he not suffered that knee injury and all. So it's a whole timing factor when it comes to that too. It all boils back down to, and I'm with you on this as well too, I you know, we'll see how it plays out for Le'Veon Bell. Maybe he made the right decision, this, that, and the other, but knowing the way the Steelers like to pay out these deals, and it would have taken a lot for them to part ways with him, regardless of what the guaranteed money was, I think I would have taken that deal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great answer as to why the Rams did this deal today. You know, goodwill, you don't have to haggle down the road when it's closer to the time. It's almost impossible for a guy like Gurley to turn down $20 million today. So if you make the deal reasonable on the back end, this is good on the Rams. And if you're a player, you know, this is a great deal for Todd Gurley. It's a great deal. You get $20 million today. There's nothing bad about this deal for Todd Gurley. And if it had been, you know, $5 or $8 million less in total value, and you still get $20 million today, it's still a great deal. You get $20 million today. I mean, I don't know. There's no other way to look at this deal. He wasn't going to get that money for 2 years because he's under contract. So you get $20 million today. Sign every person in the world is signing up for that.
Yeah, and as Joel Corey smartly pointed out, you look at the next 2 years, which he was scheduled to make almost $12 million. Then you add on the fact of back-to-back tags, even with the 20% increase, he's going to make in the next 3 years, more in the next 3 years than he would have made in the next 4 years the old way. So that's another incentive for him to sign now. And lock himself up. And, you know, the Rams get this done and out of the way on top of it. And look, you know, are they going to cut him within the next couple of years? It would take something drastic. But, you know, when you do get into that kind of fourth to fifth year, he becomes cuttable, you know? So there's that too. And he is, yes, he's a little bit younger than Le'Veon Bell too, and you know you're betting that he's got those quality years left in him, and hope that he doesn't have an injury. Now people can say, look, I mean Le'Veon Bell should have three, four, five, maybe as many five more productive years as well too. But it's going to be interesting still to see how this thing all plays out with Le'Veon Bell come next March, and like it or not, It's a significant gamble on Le'Veon Bell's part. I mean, in retrospect, he's kind of in competition with Gurley as far as matching up season for season, even though he'll probably be one of the very few high-profile, you know, assuming he stays healthy, premier running backs on the free agent market. So, in essence, he's not battling with Gurley at that point. But he's still got to have a productive season regardless and stay healthy in order to make it to the finish line in 2019.
Yep. Okay. So, it was interesting after the whole thing. I think this contract for Gurley came a little bit out of the blue, particularly with the Rams actually having all the other deals that they've made, having the issues with Aaron Donald, who's not in camp. That was newsworthy stuff. So, Dave, big picture, anything else, Steelers or NFL that on the table?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I thought Stephon Tuitt's interview the other day was very good. I think Jerry Dulac has the nuts and bolts of most of that up on PBG. Is he wasn't healthy. Look, we knew right from week one that he suffered that injury and then kind of tweaked his back or whatever. But bicep obviously was hurt in that opening game. And then the whole wasn't right later on in the season as well, too. This is a guy that you really need to bounce back. And I'm fixing to write an article a little bit about this. They need both those guys on the field talking about Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt. And I know that's a captain obvious thing to say when it comes to those two guys, but I pulled some stats on this from our charting and all, David. Over the course of the last two seasons, what percentage of the snaps would you say, total defensive snaps, what percentage of the total defensive snaps over the last 2 years would you say that the Steelers had both Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt on the field at the same time?
Yeah, did you ask me this before? I mean, obviously Cam missed the whole second half of 2 years ago, and Tuitt missed, you know, from game after getting hurt in the Browns game week one. He missed some time. I mean, I think this number is going to be you know, 30%.
Actually, my numbers come in at 40%. Over the course of the last 2 years, two seasons, regular seasons, that those two players were on the field. That's not a lot, you know. That I mean, less than 50%.
No, it's not, definitely not.
You know, and look, God bless Tyson Alualu and LT Walton and who else? Who is there? Like Ricardo Matthews, a couple years ago.
Alualu, you know, I was a fan of Ricardo Matthews. I was a little surprised they didn't get him back. Bring him back, but Alualu was, you know, all that could be hoped for. I mean, the guy had a good season for them last year.
Right, but it's still not your number one guy.
No. Right, correct.
Right.
Your starters are your starters for a reason.
Right, and, you know, how much did that play a part in that defense, even when Tua was on the field last year? You know, now he claiming wasn't 100% at any point during the season. Really, who is 100% as the season progresses? But I think that's a big aspect of this team improving on a defensive side of football. And make no mistake, Ben Roethlisberger said in one of his 20 interviews that he gave yesterday that he's not, you know, not worried about the defense. Well, good. He shouldn't have to worry things about that. I'll take some of that off of his plate for him. Obviously, we go into this training camp this year, right, concerned about the defense.
No, you know, we've talked about this now for years. I mean, this flipped about 6 years ago, you know, which was the better side of the ball. And it's not even debatable which is the better side of the ball. And I was looking up some stats yesterday. Steelers red zone defense was 31st in the NFL last year. Only the Browns were worse in percentage of touchdowns given up. The Steelers came in at 60-some%. And the Chargers were far and away the best. I think 38%, the second best team, maybe the Falcons at 43%. The Steelers were in the 60s, 65% or something like that. Touchdowns given up, red zone defense. I mean, you know, there's no question. The question is the defense. And I'm not sure the defense is better. We'll see if the defense is better. Ryan Shazier is obviously gone. And then Mike Mitchell's gone. So that you've got two different starters at those positions. You know, how much of an upgrade are you going to have from Ryan Shazier? Probably not, right? It's going to be a bit of a downgrade. Maybe you upgrade a little bit from Mike Mitchell, and you hope guys get better. You hope Dupree's better. You hope Artie's better. You hope Sean Davis, in particular, is better. And, you know, the experience of the other guys improves. But it's not a given that this defense is going to be better this year. It's just not a given. We all hope it's better, but it's not a given.
I have a little discrepancy with your defensive stats there. I have the Steelers, and this is according to the NFL, I have them 28th overall at a red zone percentage of
touchdowns allowed.
Well, red zone percentage is keeping them out of the end zone.
No, the percentage that I'm talking about, the stat I'm talking about is touchdowns allowed, percentage of touchdowns allowed in the red zone. They were at 65.9. They were 31st in the league.
All right. Well, their official red zone percentage was 61.54.
And okay. Well, if whatever the discrepancy is, I don't know. But so either way, not very good.
Well, here's the thing: the Eagles were 55.26, and anyway, the Steelers were ranked 28th, and I think the Eagles were 20th in the league with straight red zone percentage there. But I mean, I get where you're coming from there. And look, make no mistake about it. Those big plays were killing. The big plays is what bothered me the most, I think, last year. That and their inability to stop the run, especially later on in the season after Ryan Shazier down. What did you think of the defense overall heading into before Shazier went down? Do you remember what your thoughts were? I mean, they were turning the corner in several aspects, but when they got into that second half of that season, there is when.
When Hayden broke his leg and, then they just, they had trouble in the secondary. They had trouble in the secondary a lot of the season. But, yeah, they were making mistakes. You felt like maybe they turn a corner and then, Shazier goes out. And look, by the way, let's talk about Ryan Shazier just a little bit. Is, you know, we've said it almost his entire career. Ryan Shazier is a game changing player. He is also a boom and bust player. You know, Ryan Shazier, you know, missed more tackles in the backfield than anybody in the NFL, I would hazard to guess, because he plays at such great speed. He shoots gaps. But, you know, obviously, if you're an inside linebacker and you shoot gaps and miss tackles, there's going to be some space behind you. And you know, we saw that. That is the negative that you live with a Ryan Shazier.
You know, obviously, well, let me ask the question this way. Exponentially, how much better is this Steelers defense this year as opposed to last year by just getting a fully healthy Cameron Hayward and Stephon Tuitt on the field and keeping them on the field?
Well, it's no better if it's Ryan Shazier to Tyler Medicavich. I mean, those guys may improve you some, and Shazier to Medicavich is going to be, you know, offset that in a negative way.
How much better personnel-wise, just looking at the guys right now that we think will play the biggest part in this defense, the Burnetts, the Davis, the Hayden, the Mike Hiltons, you know, just looking at it top to bottom versus the same team that ended the season last year. What does the improvement look like it could or should be? I mean, obviously, you're not trying to get worse during the offseason. I mean, you look at the moves that they made and you say they should be better. I guess my question is what is your expectations of the improvement over what they ended?
Tell me how Bostic or Matakevich or how Dupree or Davis or Artie play. I mean, you know, the young guys got to improve. We I expected it to be better last year because I thought Davis and Burns would be better. They weren't. I mean, you can make an argument they were worse than they were after their rookie season. Sean Davis had a bad year and Artie didn't have a good year. So, you know, those guys got to be better. Bud's got to be better. You know, he had the end of two seasons ago when he came off the pup and played. I thought he played great. And then last year, you know, he was just a guy. He was not, you know, he's just out there. TJ played reasonably well. If he takes a big step forward, it's going to make a huge difference. But, you know, I don't know. It's just on paper, it's not a better defense necessarily than it was. It's certainly not a better defense than it was at midseason last year when Ryan Shazier was healthy. I mean, yeah, it's certainly better without Sean Spence in there.
Right. And, you know, you can make an argument that William Gay and you know, Mike Mitchell additions by subtractions, you know. So, but, I mean, we haven't seen
– Mike Mitchell doesn't have a job, does he?
No, he still doesn't have a job.
It's a little bit surprising to me. I mean, look, I wasn't the biggest Mike Mitchell fan, but I was not – I wasn't a hater. I'm a little surprised he doesn't have a job. You would think means he might not have a job, you know. There's safeties out there. He's not the only one.
Boy, that market was brutal for those guys this year. For that position. I mean, you still got guys like Kenny Vaccaro, I think, still unemployed, former first-round draft pick. Yeah. Trey Boston, as I said at the top of the show, just signed yesterday. Eric Reed's still unemployed, right?
Right.
I mean, not a good year to be a safety. Not that there are ever really many years to be a top free agent safety, but certainly not this offseason here. Let me get the thermometer out. Take your temperature. I'll do it orally. where do you come in at this point now with the Matakavis John Bostic thing?
You know, one day of reps, like I said, ask me after 1 week. So, same position, but certainly it now appears to be a competition. Look, I'm a Tyler Matakavich fan. I'm a fan of guys who are productive. I'm a fan of guys who are smart. Look, you know, I had to make my chops as an athlete, you know, at the higher levels. As I moved up the food chain, I wasn't the best athlete. I had to be the smartest guy and use my athleticism and my intelligence to kind of compete at the highest levels I was able to compete. So I'm all for guys like that. Look, I root for guys like that. But
let's you were the Tom Brady of Yale soccer, right?
Yeah. Well, there were lots of Tom Brady's at Yale soccer, but that's how I made my chops. And so good on Matakevich, but it doesn't give me great comfort in the defense. Right. It'll make me feel better about it, even though I'm rooting for him.
Well, in other words, you know, don't tell you about the labor pains. Just show you the baby, right?
Exactly.
You know.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm still going to be a little bit surprised if Bostic's not, you know, running with the first team defense in the middle of next week.
Yeah, maybe not that early, but me as well. When the smoke finally clears here, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this. Yeah, you know, more than anything, as camp progresses, I said they're at the top of the show as well too. I want to see what they do with these sub packages and this dime. You know, I think that's really going to be where the finagling goes on. I think that's where we're really the most interesting aspects, because I mean, are you going to pull Mike Tilton off the field more this year?
No.
You got to think you're going to try to get Cam Sutton on the field, right? I mean, we've said this all us. I mean, you got to. This guy is supposedly, now that William Gay's gone, probably one of the perceived smartest guys on the defense.
Yeah, you know, you drafted Edmonds in the first round. He's going to be ahead. To me, he's going to be ahead of Sutton. So, not room for everybody. You're going to get the best guys, the best athletes on the field. And you would think Edmonds is, you know, has a nod over Sutton on that. So, you know, he may have to wait his turn.
You know, yeah. Well, I mean, I still think we're going to see. It's going to be a 17-man defense. I'm telling you, it's going to be a 17-man defense, and they better get good at shuffling these guys in and out. I'm using some hyperbole there. Probably, you know, 15 guys or whatnot. But when you look at the starting 11. You know, obviously, you know, Hargrave's going to come off the field some, and Vince Williams going to come off the field some, and you're going to get an extra safety cornerback in there. Mike Hilton going to see his share of playing time. But I fully expect them to hit the ground running in some way, shape, or form, or trying to get Sutton on the field some snaps. You got a first-round draft pick in Edmonds. This isn't Dick LeBeau land anymore, where these first-round defensive draft picks sit, right? I mean, they get these guys on the field sooner or later, so it's going to be interesting to kind of watch all this come together. And yes, Artie Burns got to play better, you know. And I think, kind of wrapping up here, Mike Tomlin, you know, it was an obvious statement, but it was good to hear him asked about it yesterday. You know, two guys that I don't think talked about enough of what happened last year, still. Vance McDonald and Joe Hayden. These are two guys that were added after training camp. You know, didn't get the benefit of working the whole offseason with the team. They're thrown into the fire immediately, and they swam. Now, did they swim well? No, not all the time. And then they went on to both miss a substantial amount of games due to injuries. Getting those two guys back and keeping them on the field alone, and then you combine that with being able to keep guys like Hayward and Tuitt on the field together, I think will make a huge impact on this team. I'm not worried about the offense. Now, obviously, I think McDonald makes that offense even better if he stays on the field. So let's throw him out of the equation here. Just talking about Hayden alone, and I asked Alex this last night, do you think Joe Hayden has it in him to put up a, I don't want to say his best season of his career, but let's say the last good one that he had, which I think was 2014, that was a Pro Bowl year for him. Does he have that left in him?
I think Joe Hayden can be a good starting NFL quarterback. I don't expect him to go to the Pro Bowl.
Can he have 3-4 interceptions this year?
Sure, of course he can. Sure.
You know, and I think if you combine that with look, this is the first offseason in 2 years he hasn't had to recover from a surgery. Obviously, he was injured last year. He's got to get that bugaboo of being dinged up off his resume, just like Vance McDonald does. Artie Burns, you know, he's got to take that next step forward with him. The makings are there to be. I don't know what's realistic talking about top, let's say DVOA. You know, outsiders' defensive rankings. What's realistic? Top 15?
10 would be ten would be an achievement.
I mean, if they're top 10, I mean,
I think they finished finished it around top 10 line. I think they were, you know, on all three units, they were right around, you know, they were obviously offensively, they were, I think they were right there defensively too. It's just, you know, obviously when they lost Shazier, things didn't get better, and in the playoffs, it was a disaster. So
if they finish in top 10, somebody deserves some medals, right?
Well, I'm going to pull it up. I think they were, you know, I think they were there last year. So let's wrap this up I think they were right there last year. Let's see. Team defense, Steelers, DVOA. Defensive efficiency last year, Pittsburgh was ninth.
Was that overall?
Overall, yep. They were 11th against, the 7th against the pass and 18th against the rush.
Well, those big plays played a big part in that. I'll have to go back and look at some of that stuff, because remember those, I mean, they fell apart against the run and against the pass in the second half. They were good in that first half. Except for those big runs they gave up to the Ravens and the Jaguars. Remember us talking about extrapolating out some of those big plays that had happened and all like that. Now, when you got into that second half of that season, the Colts, Moncrief touchdown, big play, the Chiefs, that big play, blown coverage, against the Titans, you had guys running, who was it, Ricardo Matthews, had the big one there, I think, beginning the second half, who was the kid in the Green Bay. You remember all those big 30, 40-yard plays that ended up in the end zone? Those really end up skewing, making some of these figures look off-kilter here. Though, but yeah, I mean, look, my main contention is keeping these guys on the field. And of course, you could go around the league and say, you know, yeah, Dave, you know, if these units stay healthy, then they're going to play up to expectations here. But you know, I really got to see it with these guys on the defensive line. Have to see Joe Hayden stay on the field and Bud Dupree. You know, Alex and I were talking last night, David. He's only played 30 preseason snaps in the last two seasons. Missed a lot of training camp and preseason time the last 2 years. So you know, something to watch for him in training camp alone is him just staying on the field and getting some reps there. And you want to talk about a guy that's going to be really under the spotlight this season, it's him. Do I think that they have the pieces in place to be a better defense than last year? Yes. Do I think that finishing top 10 is a possibility? Probably right about top 10. I think, but they need more turnovers. They need to quit giving up the big plays, and you go from there, and a lot of things will work themselves out fine. Okay, here we are, 1 hour and what, 20 minutes in. You got anything else you want to
end with? No, I'm all talked out for one day of practice.
All right, Alex and I will be back gabbing at it later on tonight after he returns from Latrobe from day two of Steelers training camp. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed the reminiscing and the look back at how all this got started early in the show there. In the meantime, David and I should be back together on Monday. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and you want to donate to the cause, go to Steelers Depot.
Hit that donate button. Yeah. Need some cash.
Hit that donate button up right navigation of the bar. All right, I enjoyed it. David, season 9. Here we go.
Season 9, as always. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.